You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 196 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Justin Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. And for the second consecutive week, we have a third Pelton brother with us. And for the first time, often alluded to on this podcast, it's Mrs. Fantasy Genius joining us this week. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is a very special episode of the Peltoncast.
Why is that?
It's the Panda Express edition.
Panda!
That was coming in hot.
You asked for it. You got it.
No, they did. Nobody asked
you
for this.
You didn't ask for it, and you got it.
We'll see whether people want it or not. They may return this. It's a little late for a Christmas return, but they may still return this.
We are reviewing Panda Express's Chicken Teriyaki on Peltoncast 196. But before then, we have to get to some toasts.
And before that, we've got to get to this week's beer. Which has, so we've got two beers that I picked up earlier, both of them from our friends at Rogue Brewing. And one of them has maybe my favorite label, like, of any beer bottle.
Is it because there's a hydroplane on it?
It's a speedboat. It's not technically a hydroplane.
It looks an awful lot like a hydroplane.
It does. It's the Rogue Newport Knights West Coast IPA. And it is styled, of course, in the Miami Vice style, much like the Miami Vice jerseys that the Heat did not wear when I was at the Blazers game against them on Sunday. But there were some in the crowd.
Shall I read about this one?
Please do.
Does it have an alligator on it?
Newport Knights West Coast IPA brewed with El Dorado hops. There's nothing quite like a night out in Newport. From craft beer and the freshest seafood to bonfires on the beach, this one's dedicated to Newport and those unforgettable nights having fun on the 101. By the way, none of us have ever been to Newport Beach.
I have.
Yeah, wow. Speak for yourself. The Pelton brothers have not been to Newport.
I almost died there. I'm not joking.
Are you going to elaborate on
what,
that?
What happened?
Oh, I almost drowned body surfing.
Oh, did Uncle Steve rescue you?
I wish. No, I don't wish.
You don't wish. No.
No.
The beer opens with aromas of mango, papaya, and tangerine, followed by an atom bomb of pine and grapefruit notes that ultimately settle into a surprisingly smooth finish. But we're not finished with this week's beers. No, sir. We also have with us, from our good friends at Rogue Brewing Company,
the Rogue Coast Haze Imperial Hazy IPA with fresh hops.
Hello!
Which tells you that it is not fresh at all, because fresh hop... Tristan was unaware of this. Fresh hop season is over. Hashtag fresh hop season.
I, for one, don't accept that fresh hop season is ever over.
No, that's not how growing things works, actually.
And this one...
I mean, it's probably still good to drink.
Not one of your favorite cans. These are pretty nice cans. Has a truck
that's a good can.
Barreling in with fresh hops.
But it's not as good as the Newport Knights can. That's unparalleled.
As farmers and brewers, we understand the importance of fresh ingredients. That's why our favorite time of year is harvest time, when ingredients, just like it currently is.
I love a good February harvest.
When the ingredients are their freshest and beers just begging to be brewed. To make this beer, we cut down fresh Rogue farm hops, load them into a truck, and rush them post-haste to February.
Post-haste.
Over to our brewery on the coast. When the hops arrive, they go straight into the brew, still wet from the farm.
I mean, the hops got to the brewery long before February. It's the can didn't get to us until February.
The effort pays off in this hazy, fruity, wet hop-laden Imperial IPA. Enjoy. All right. Should we crack open first the hydroplane beer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The anticipation is very strong for the Newport Knights.
Why did you almost drown at Newport Beach?
Oh, riptide. Don't worry about it. That was from Ukul. I was body surfing, got caught in a riptide.
Well, the important thing is that you did, in fact, survive.
Survived.
Because otherwise you couldn't be on this podcast with us right now.
Couldn't.
That would be the number one effect of that.
I don't let it cloud my view of Newport Beach either.
Yeah.
It's a good place.
Don't blame Newport.
All right. Well, let's get to some toast here.
It was a very uneven pour.
It's very strange. The cups aren't the same size. I'm all thrown off with three people.
That is true. Our math is no good at all. All right. First off, to Lauren Jackson and Swin Cash, the former longtime Storm teammates who were selected to the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame in their first year of eligibility, announced earlier this week. Cash is also a candidate for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame this year, which will announce finalists on Friday as part of All-Star Weekend. Dale Ellis, Marcus Johnson, and George Carl are other candidates on this year's ballot with ties to Seattle and the Sonics in their case. Lauren is not eligible for that because she played in Australia after her WNBA retirement, which is apparently when the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame is dating this from. So she will be surely in at some point. Of course.
There's a hydroplane on the can.
Next up, to UW alum Nick Taylor, who won the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am on Sunday, besting the lefty Phil Mickelson. This is our first ever golf toast on the podcast.
Is it really?
The price
is wrong, Phil.
I don't know what else would have qualified for that.
Well, right. We're now a golf school.
Yes, we are.
After Sunday's performance, anything school.
I got to admit, I did not know that there was a golfer named Nick Taylor who was a UW alum. I was there when Paige McKenzie and she had a brother, like maybe Brock. They were both on the tours for a while.
Look, save it for remember some UW golf years.
Okay. Lastly, the most important of these toasts. It's not on your notes. It was added late.
Wow.
To the Seattle Mariners for retroactively making the playoffs in 2002, 2003, 2007, 2009, 2014, 2016, and 2018. Under the proposed new Major League Baseball postseason format reported by Joel Sherman of the New York Post recently, Larry Stone of the Seattle Times put that list together, and credit friend of the pod Dan Morse for mocking up the banner with all of those years on it next to the times the Mariners actually made the playoffs.
What are these rules?
So seven teams would make the playoffs in each league now under the proposed format, and only the team with the best record in each league would have a bye in the first round.
So they were pretty close to making the playoffs quite a few times.
I mean, they're very good at being just slightly better than 500. Just slightly better than an average team. Very bad at being actually good.
It's five right now, and they would expand to seven.
Yes.
They should not do that.
It seems like it's probably going to happen.
Is it really?
I think so.
The only reason I don't want it to happen is because I don't want this Mariners streak to end.
I thought about doing a hot takes about this, but then I realized, this is it. This is the joke. That's all there is. Like, you can't write it better than that. That's the joke.
So that wraps up our toasts.
Congrats to the Mariners.
Indeed. Once again, you guys got kind of close to the playoffs so many times in the last two decades. I wanted to take a moment to recap where we currently stand in Seattle Burger Month at Lil Woody's. And where we stand is, you have decided not to get a Lil Woody's beanie?
I don't know if that's exactly what my decision was, where you can frame it as, I decided that I wasn't going to go to Lil Woody's every single week of the month. It's not as convenient for me as it used to be.
I guess that's true. I just question your commitment.
All right, fine. Question my commitment.
I mean, it is more convenient for me, as it turns out, than it is for you.
Because you're functionally unemployed. Mm-hmm. Your only responsibility last week was coaching my child's basketball game.
My only responsibility last week? You picked last week is the week I didn't have any responsibility. Wrote 10,000 words of trade cards. Did two podcasts and wrote winners and losers. Podcasts.
Look, any of us could have written 10,000 words of trade grades. But Mrs. Fantasy Genius wrote at least a few thousand.
That's true. Not all of us did. So we are already 1 week of Seattle Burger Month in the books. The first week, which was the good old burger from, I should look up this list here, the chef from Canless. And I got to tell you, that one, that one's going to be hard to top, is the best of the Seattle Burger Month burgers. It was very similar, in fact, to the Peltoncast burger, I would say. There was like a nice combination of fry sauce, cheese. The romaine lettuce came out better than I would have expected in there. I was a little
waiting for an offer to be the executive chef at Canless.
Yes, that's the right conclusion here, is that we're basically on the same level.
If this burger is basically the same as the Peltoncast burger.
I don't want to go too far here.
If only they knew about your platters.
That was Brady Williams from Canlis.
You know what, Brady Williams from Canlis? I've got two words for you. Cease and desist.
No. First off, a lot of people have some cease and desist for us on that burger.
No. Don't tell anyone about it.
Okay, so Tuesday, as we record this today, was the first day of the second week of Seattle Burger Month. And that was Eric Rivera from Addo and the Boricua burger, which was a little more.
I'm not going to lie, this burger looked kind of bad.
That's Boricua. Come on. Yeah? No. Like Puerto Rican? Like Boricua?
It's a good thing Mrs. Fantasy Genius is
on the podcast pronunciation. Peltoncast ethnic pronunciation. It's good that you're here.
I hadn't even watched when we talked about this last week.
now he's sweating.
So this
what does Boricua mean?
From Puerto Rico. Puerto Rican.
Oh.
Which indeed he is. Yes.
Yeah. Eric Rivera. Boricua.
The inspiration behind my burger comes from being a Puerto Rican growing up in Washington State.
You're welcome.
Hang the banner for almost pronouncing that right. Kevin Pelton almost pronounced Seattle Burger with the burger name right. Wow. Oh my God.
So the one thing that's not really clear from the photo.
What is all in this?
They look like just standard beef patties.
Okay.
But they're not.
Oh.
It's picadillo beef.
Oh.
So it's marinated in the seasoning, and it's, you know, it's definitely a much different flavor and a much more flavorful experience than your
are
typical
there
burger
chips
patty.
Across it? What are the things that are laying across?
Those
it?
Are plantain chips.
Okay, so there's giant plantain chips.
On the photo, they like are like sticking out like wings from the burger.
It's
that
a
was
much.
Not if you looked at the photo I posted on Instagram. That's
oh,
not how
this?
They actually came. Yeah, I went there today.
Oh well, was it good?
It was pretty good. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a. I want to call it an interesting flavor profile, but I fear that people will take interesting to mean bad. And I don't mean it that way. It's legitimately interesting. The one concern I had was there's no cheese on this burger.
Oh.
And that's a big loss.
Mm. Were the plantain chips crunchy or were they like fried plantains?
A little crunchy. A little crunchy, yeah.
Did they get soggy?
No.
Okay.
No, they're firm.
Did you go up and order and say, I'll have the Boricua burger?
I did, yes. It was not correct. I don't know if the cashier knew to correct me. Unclear. There's a lot of special sauce on here, which is good.
Ooh,
that's necessary to give it a little more, to keep it from drying out too much. But I would definitely recommend giving it a shot. It's a, like I said, it's an interesting, very different flavor profile from what you're used
you're
to on a burger.
You're gonna be insufferable when you get that beanie.
Oh yes, I 100% am. After you got on me about taking the chef's apron. Without actually having gone to
oh,
all
I'm gonna,
of the...
I'm going to be emailing some people. Some DMs will be sent.
I bet they will. You wanted to talk quickly about the food you ate last weekend in Los Angeles.
So I was in LA. We had a date.
I thought you were going to talk about the mushrooms you fried up last night. No. 11 p.m.
Rarely do I talk for Marco. As a five-year-old demanded to eat mushrooms for the first time ever because he thought that would be a thing that he'd be into. Spoiler alert, he was not.
Where did he learn about mushrooms?
Probably YouTube.
Yeah.
I think it's Zelda related.
Makes sense.
Carry on.
So had a day in LA with no real plans.
I probably should have put this in the coach's corner because this is the reason you were not at Baby Fantasy Genius's basketball game last weekend because you were in LA.
Negligent parenting. And coaching, but had an evening with no food plans. So we decided to travel down to downtown LA, me and third Pelton brother Reese, and did a little taco challenge. So there are a couple of taco places that are really highly rated that are pretty close to each other within a couple minute walk.
Are they that close?
Oh yeah.
I didn't realize that since I've been to them in separate times and didn't put them together in the map in my head.
It was like a 5-minute walk max. And so that's Sonora Town, which we ate at first, and then also Tacos 1986. So this is a Sunday night in downtown LA, and it is fucking deserted, right? No, nobody, it's a wasteland, right? But then, sitting like a shining beacon in the middle of deserted downtown LA is Sonora Town with a line out the door.
Nice.
Which, I mean, it seems like it's the way that they have it set it up, there's almost always a line out the door.
Yeah, it's a very, there's not a lot of room for the line from the counter.
So.
And it's not a very big location.
It didn't take that long to go through. So we split a burrito 2.0. We had to, you know.
What's the difference between the burrito 2.0 and just a regular burrito?
That's all they have is burrito. Oh, okay. There's no 1.0 burrito.
All right. They
go straight to 2.0.
Well, maybe it was on the menu previously and then they upgraded.
It's the more advanced version of a burrito.
Gotcha.
So split a burrito 2.0, split a chicken chimichanga. And then also each got tacos. I got a steak taco, and I think he got a chicken taco. And so I ate the steak taco first. I was like, man, this taco is incredible. Like, this steak is marinated really well. It was so flavorful, right? And then I had the chimichanga. And there's nothing like it, right? Like, you hear the word chimichanga, and you have this impression of it. But it's like, it's so meat heavy, and the meat is perfectly cooked. It's smoky. It's like creamy inside. Everything is mixed perfectly inside of the tortilla. The tortilla is like freshly made, and it's like just gooey enough. I mean, the closest thing to describe this to would be the baby burrito at Tacos Chuki's.
But better tortilla? I mean, the tortillas at Tacos Chuki's are not the standout of that.
I think the baby burrito tortillas are good.
Okay.
But the taco is incredible. There's just so much on the taco, right? Like, it's just loaded down with stuff, and there's the guacamole, and it's like, it's heavy. It's so much more than a street taco. And then the burrito is, they just, everything is portioned so perfectly when you're eating this. Yes?
I'm just trying to, like, have an image in my mind of how you and Reese shared a burrito. Did you, like, cut it in half? Was it, like, a Lady and the Tramp type situation?
Yeah, I'm definitely,
like,
envisioning Lady and the Tramp.
You can't share a chimichanga, I get it. But, like, I can't get past, I mean.
We met in the middle.
Okay. No, fair enough.
We cut it in half very easily. That's the thing is.
But if it's so full, how?
That's the thing that's incredible about it is I was slicing it in half. I think I was slicing the burrito, and I was like, man, this is slicing so perfectly. Nothing is coming out. Everything is mixed so perfectly inside of this burrito that, like, nothing spilled out. It wasn't messy in any way. Like,
nobody got the shit end. Nope. Is this explicit? Sorry.
As far as I know.
It is, yes.
Oh, whoa. Did you just swear on the Pelton cast?
Sorry.
Wow.
Your children could be listening to this.
They would not be surprised.
I've never heard you swear before.
Mateo was like, it's my fucking tablet today. And he said, like, where did you hear that?
Oh, well. He said it's his fucking tablet.
Yeah.
You know what I think the good thing is at this point? With the third child, is you don't naturally laugh quite as much when they start swearing. That was the real challenge with the first couple of kids.
I think we still do.
Yeah, that's probably true.
My fucking God, I would have laughed. So, but it was just like, it's portioned perfectly. Every single bite was excellent. Now, you're going to give your taco rankings for LA. So then we walked down the street to Tacos 1986. There was okay, here's the other thing.
So what's interesting, by the way, is I have never had the chimichanga there or the burrito 2.0. I've had the bean and cheese mini burrito in addition to the tacos. Which
it's called a chivichanga, not a chimichanga.
Sure.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes. The bean and cheese burrito, it, to me, is the standout there, which you didn't get.
You haven't had the chimichanga, so you don't even fucking know.
I guess not.
Yeah, give me my fucking tablet.
Explicit label this week.
And also a Tecate light, because there's apparently a lighter version of Tecate. It was so everything about the experience at Sonora Town, we talk about when you go to In-N-Out, like, the employees seem like they like working there. It was just like the Sonora Town, the vibes were incredible. Right? And you can feel it. It's just like everybody liked working there. Everybody was happy. It's like, it was the perfect experience. It was up there with the best food experiences you could possibly have. So then we walked down the street to Tacos 1986, and it's basically deserted, like everything else in downtown LA. I was a little bit surprised. I was curious to see if there was a crowd. And I wanted to get a taco and a molita, and I ended up getting two molitas. So I literally just took the top layer of tortilla off one of them, and I turned that molita into a taco.
A taco with cheese.
It was a little bit cheesier. And I do have to say, like, these two tacos are not comparable. Tacos 1986 is not bad, though. Like, it is an extremely high quality of street taco, but it's still, there's nothing that's transcendent about it. Like, we talk about with teriyaki, and we're going to talk about teriyaki later today because it's the Panda Express episode. But
I thought it was the Panda Express episode.
The Panda Express episode. But this was just like, if I'm getting tacos and I want a street style taco, you should probably get the best street style taco, and this might be it. But it's not like a unique thing really in any way. It's just like very well done of street style tacos. Sonora Town is it's just fucking reverie, right? Like it's at a different level. And it's unlike any taco that I've basically ever eaten. For me, Sonora Town is the number one taco I've ever had in my life. Or at least taco/burrito place. Number one, excluding nobody. Pasadita, Tacos Chuki's, like these would be the best tacos in Seattle.
Wait, better than you thought? Then which of the San Francisco places did you go to?
I went to which one? You would know this better than I would.
Name the
places again.
El Farolito.
Yeah.
And
I went to Farolito, I think.
Okay.
I honestly thought El Farolito was just average. Wow. I would rather go to Tacos Chuki's than El Farolito.
This is a terrible take. Again, that's Tristan at Tristan Coracino.
Yeah, fine. On Twitter. Nobody follows me, so.
A few months ago, I got a tweet from Eric Anderson at Eric at UW asking me for LA taco recommendations. And I was like, I'm not sure I'm really the person to ask here. I don't go to LA
but
that frequently.
Definitely answered.
But I sure gave him LA taco rankings. And number one was Sonora Town. Number two was Morisco's Jalisco, which specializes in fried shrimp tacos.
And that's the one that they had, what David Chang had on.
Is seen on the Ugly Delicious Taco episode with the late Jonathan Gold. Number three was Guisado's, which also is in downtown. And there's a variety of locations, but also is in downtown LA, not far from these two places. I had Tacos 1986, number four, and then number five, Home State, which specializes in Austin style.
You
breakfast
had Home State
burritos.
After Tacos 1986.
I did.
I just cannot agree with you here. I would choose Home State over everything but Sonora Town. And I'll tell you why. Breakfast tacos.
I mean, I do love me some breakfast tacos.
Breakfast tacos are the premier taco. I think Home State is excellent. But sure, whatever, fine.
That's why it's my taco rankings.
Yeah, at Eric Anderson UW, get at me for my taco rankings.
Okay, we're going to get back to food in a minute when we talk about Panda Express. But first, as Tristan refills us, as we move on to the Fresh Hop Rogue, it's time to remember some years, and specifically this week, to remember the year 1996, a year in which the Sonics went to the NBA Finals.
Hello, Mrs. Fantasy Genius. Tell us about your experience watching the Sonics. No. Do you just want the Trader Joe's wine, or do you want more of this beer?
Both.
Okay. In true Pelton Cast fashion.
Why not both, Gif? Why don't you start us off with your memories of 1996?
Because where do I even start? I was doing some research in my memory.
Okay, good.
To try and jog my memory about 1996. And I think it's important, before we go into the sports realm, to start with fashion.
Okay.
It is. So in 1996, I was the ripe old age of 11. I was sixth grade going into seventh grade. And some things that I remember fashion-wise were my bangs. I had bangs that were, they took a long time every day. They stood out at least 2 to 3 inches from the forehead. Otherwise, like, what's the point of having them?
Of course.
So, you know, you had to hair dry them. Then you had to curling iron them. And then you had to spray them with aerosol hairspray so that they didn't move. And then you had to hope to God it wasn't windy. Because if it was, the bangs lifted as a unit a la T-Boss.
And then you took flight.
And, well, yeah, in theory, yeah. So that was like a main concern is how were the bangs for the female sector. That's also the year I got my first Nike Windbreaker.
Nice. Oh my God.
I don't know if either of you had one of those. I mean, that was a kind of a unisex type deal. I know mine had a
I think around blue, around yes? then would have been I got a Mariners Windbreaker that Ooh. I wore for a solid 8 years.
People were Ooh. Breaking a lot of wind in the mid-90s.
Yes, yes. It was like the highlight of my life. I also think I wore it way too long, but it was good times. It had like the nice elastic waistband. Mm. So it billowed out over the top of the pants. It was great. I also had my first pair of Tearaways.
Oh, nice.
Oh, man. Tearaway pants.
Yeah.
I don't think I got into those until a little bit later.
Yeah, no. I was full on 1996. It was the Tearaways. I would wear boxer shorts under the Tearaways just in case. So that
Good decision.
Just like Kevin here, if needed, I could just rip my pants off and have on athletic shorts.
People may not know. We don't
people know may not know this, podcast, but it's certain, a thing.
Very certain people do not know
wow.
this. Yes.
Well, there's no better time than now to discuss this.
It started a little later than 1996, but I do wear shorts
Still?
Under my pants at all
to
times.
To this day?
Yeah.
No better place than
no
here,
way.
No better time than now.
You didn't know that. I'm not wearing them right now.
Yeah. Can I tell the listener how I found this out?
Because I just dropped my pants.
You straight up did. Like, I hadn't known you that long. You came over to my house. You came into the living room. I think I was in grad school. I was, like, doing some homework. You dropped trow. And I was like, holy shit. And then you had on some athletic pants. And then you went and ran or something. I was like, okay, now I know. Now it's a thing.
You were like, basketball prospectuses, Kevin Pelton is stripping right here.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that actually predated basketball prospectus, if we're being honest here.
Could be. Anyway, so 1996 me also was able to. So I recognized the kindred nice. Spirit there. The other fashion icon item that y'all might have also participated in, the Nike socks. Mm.
I didn't get into Nike socks until like... So I started going to the Nike employee store, I think. Woo. So it was very late.
Oh, wow.
Name dropping. That,
yeah, I've never been in the Nike employee store, but that's all right.
It was when I went in the Nike employee store.
All right.
I took
anyways.
My canless burger to the Nike employee store.
Right.
It's just a burger.
And I tore off my pants.
This podcast was a huge mistake.
Oh, Lord. Sorry. Sorry.
At least Katie isn't here, too.
Yeah.
Dear diary. Roasting.
Dear diary.
Got made fun of today.
Let's get back to the socks.
Okay.
Because not only did I wear one pair of Nike socks at a time, in 1996, I began... To wear two.
Two, yeah.
Because do I wear the white ones with the black swoosh or the black ones with the white swoosh?
Why not both?
Why not both?
Much like the rogue and the rose.
Yeah. Why not both? Double fisting socks. It was a thing. Pull one pair up a little higher, then let the other pair just kind of peek out. There you go. So, yeah.
It rogue's eye.
That's setting the tone, setting the fashion tone for 1996.
Yeah, we haven't done much fashion on this. On
no, that's good. That's why. That's why I wanted here.
You're welcome.
Also, since you made that Breaking Wind joke, I checked. Austin Powers was 1997, the original.
Okay,
Austin
we'll get
Powers.
There. We'll get there next
yeah,
week.
We'll remember that.
Okay. Now, moving into the sport realm, because I am on the Pelton Cast. Fabulous Pelton Cast. Mariners. So, in the year of 1996, I was, everyone should know, a diehard Dan Wilson fan.
Of course.
How could one not be? I had decided I was going to marry Dan Wilson. And my good friend at the time, who shall not be named, decided that she was going to marry Alex Rodriguez, for better or worse. We don't need to... Cultural relativism of the time. We don't need to think about that now. But anyway, our plan was that we were going to vault ourselves off of the 300 level of the kingdom. And as we were falling, because no security could catch us from that height or stop us, we would be saved by Alex Rodriguez and Dan Wilson.
Did you just not even consider the possibility that Paul Sorrento would end up catching you?
John Marzano.
We're going to get to that later. No, you're not going to jump when John Marzano's there. No.
You're going to wait for it, Dan. You're
looking
at
the schedule. You've got to wait. Yes.
You're looking at the schedule.
We were paying a lot of attention, probably not for the same reasons as you, but we were paying a lot of attention. So this was the plan. And then upon being caught.
Could have been Russ Davis. Could have been worse.
Oh, I mean, I probably would have crushed Russ Davis with my body. Sorry, Russ.
He wouldn't have caught you as it turned out.
Oh, an error.
There's your 96 rep memory.
Zing. Take that, Russell Davis.
Anyways, upon catching our gorgeous 11-year-old body, they would have fallen madly in love with us, left their partners, and it would be history. Soon enough, we realized.
I mean, that definitely would be history. If
sure, happened. Sure. We realized this wasn't going to happen. I mean, we weren't like that dumb. So what we decided to go for instead with ourselves sitting at a 300 level was Rob Ducey.
What? Rob Ducey? Why? I've not thought about
he was
Rob
there.
Ducey in so long.
We were there. He was bored. He listened when we called his name because nobody else hollered for Rob Ducey.
I doubt they did. Also, no. There were not that many people in the outfield in 1996. Yeah. We were there too.
Legit, it was just us hanging over there with our gloves thinking we were going to catch something. And we would holler for
you
Rob Ducey.
Catch Rob Ducey.
Yeah, I mean, you got to settle sometimes, right? I swear to God, he turned around. He did one time. And then it was on. We were getting those $10 tickets. Every time we possibly could get someone to drive us there, and we were hollering at Rob Ducey.
Wow.
I have strong memories of 1996 of Jacob Brumfield when he was playing for the Blue Jays dancing in the outfield, and we were very excited about
Jacob
this.
Jacob Brumfield?
Yeah.
No, I got nothing there. Wow.
I mean, that's a very specific memory, but it may have been the game that would have been opposite Game 7 of the NBA Finals had it gone that far, which we were at.
Does this make Rob AC Ducey in or out of the Pelton Cast Hall of Fame?
I think definitely in.
Oh, damn.
I mean, it sure meant a lot to me.
I mean, damn you, Rob Ducey.
It's not going to be like a real thing. You don't have to worry about him like coming to the introduction and sweeping Mrs. Fantasy Genius away.
No! No, no, wait, wait. Ducey!
Anyway, and that's where I learned to set my sights in a more reasonable place there.
She went down a few notches more, and then she got to you.
Oh, my God.
That's my story about the Mariners. Good times.
The Mariners were, in fact, playing Toronto that night. I am correct about that.
Yeah.
And then I have one more Mariners take, which I'm, going
to... I like that you have takes.
Well, of course I have takes.
24 years after.
I'm going to break the rules a little bit.
Okay.
Please forgive me.
Okay. The Mariners did that in 2002, 2004.
Yes, they did.
They didn't break the Astros broke the rules. You got the joke wrong, buddy.
Because this is technically 1997. But 1997 is the year that every Sunday, the Mariners in the Seattle Times, there would be a full-size poster of a player. Mm-hmm. And I lived for these posters.
I feel like there was a Ken Cloud in your room.
Yes!
Wait.
Oh, boy,
just
that ruined the story?
Yeah.
So when I saw that there was Ken Cloud, I mean, come on, I'd moved on from Rob Ducey. I knew Dan Wilson wasn't happening. Ken Cloud was the one, right? So I got the poster. I put it on my wall amidst all the other, my Lauryn Hill posters, et cetera. There was this giant Seattle Times Ken Cloud poster. And then fast forward to 2006.
2006, decade later, yeah.
I go into Tristan's room, and lo and behold, in his childhood bedroom on the wall,
still,
is the Ken Cloud poster.
Wow, to Ken Cloud.
Darth Maul, Ken Cloud.
And I knew that was the way.
Wow.
That was the one.
Huh? Yep. Wow.
Thank you, Ken Cloud.
Ken Cloud. Who would have known that his season where he had it was 4-2 with a 5.12 ERA.
He was going to be something.
We really thought so for a while there.
We did.
Man, he was worse than I thought he was. I'm on his baseball reference right now. 5.12 ERA, 6.37, and then 7.96 in 1999.
I mean, there was a lot of bad Mariners pitchers in that era.
Look, you got to look at the whip where he was over 2 in 1999.
You know what I recall being pretty depressing about the Mariners in 96 when they traded Darren Bragg for this pitcher on the Red Sox no one had ever heard of named Jamie Moyer?
Oh, Jamie.
That was depressing.
Because we like Darren Bragg.
I love Darren Bragg. Was that the, did they trade Veritek that year too? Derek Lowe and Jason Veritek?
No, that was, we'll get to that.
Okay. Wow.
We'll get Wait to for that. It.
Okay, so for me, sports, so Kevin mentions the finals, right? Sonics played in the finals. This is, because I want to talk about a sport that's going to be relevant to you. We're going to talk about the Sonics for a second. This is easily the most important year of our basketball lives, right? Both 95 and 96, as it were. The Sonics went 39-2 at home that year.
Might have been 38-3, but yes.
I basically did not see a loss at home that entire season.
No, that's the opposite. I didn't see a loss at home the entire regular season.
In the regular season at home. I think they lost to the Knicks and the Pacers, if I recall correctly. There was the Sunday after, so we had, there was Thanksgiving, and then the Sunday after Thanksgiving, we did Pelton Thanksgiving at our aunt and uncle's house. Yep. And then we went directly to the Sonics Bulls game.
I didn't go.
Jordan came back, just, this was me and Jan, and the Bulls were wearing their pinstripe jerseys, which we thought were the coolest fucking things on earth.
They were slightly cooler than the Magic's blue pinstripe jerseys.
And the Sonics beat the Bulls. I think Gary Payton got a steal from Michael Jordan at the very end of that game.
That all checks out.
To beat the Bulls, right? This was thrilling stuff. I'm pretty sure it was a Knicks and a Pacers loss. November 28th is the day I wanted that they had a loss. Is that right?
November 28th against the Indiana Pacers. Correct.
There you go. See, I can still rival you with random random memories. But this was like, this was the end of 95, but I'm counting it as the 96 season. I remember going to the first game at Key Arena, and there was, McDonald's had four-piece nuggets for like 89 cents.
Oh, that was a big thing in 1996. It was 38-3, by the way. They lost in overtime to the Knicks in January, and then also the San Antonio Spurs by 1 point in March. That may have been the game that both Bob Hill and George Karl were kicked out of.
Oh, wow. Me and Dad went to that game, to the opening night, the first game at Key Arena.
Don't tell Jan.
Yeah, in Jan's memory, she was there and is mad at me for even mentioning that I was there with somebody else. But, and I remember, so we sat next to the people that we had our tickets with for a chunk of years after that. And I'm like, hey, to Joseph Evans. And I'm like, hi. You know, we have these seats here, and they had season tickets next to us. And it was this like crazy moment where we met people that you maybe still interact with.
We're still Facebook friends. He and I were the same age, so it was like a perfect match, I think.
And there were so many moments that we had. There was the sweep against the Rockets in the second round, where Joseph was not that old at the time, but an intimidating figure. And they gave out around rally towels. I think this was game one against the Rockets where we blew them out, right? And so we moved a seat back because 222 row 12 wasn't bad enough. We had to get to 222 row 13, which was the last row in the arena in the end zone. Like, this was the year that we got season tickets to the Sonics.
Yes.
Which is pretty fortuitous. Sometimes I tell people that and I'm like, yeah, we got season tickets in the year that they went to the championship. It wasn't like we were bandwagon fans, really. It was just like the new arena opened and that was the time to do it.
Well, there was an opportunity to do it because they added 7,000 seats. Like, the old Coliseum was very, or 5,000 probably, but the old Coliseum was really small.
And so we moved to row 13 for, I'm pretty sure, game one against the Rockets, and we're waving our rally towels around, and I'm a dumbass kid, and like hit the people who had moved into our seats in front of us, and there was a man who turned around and was just like yelling at me, and Joseph was like, yelled back at this kid, and I was like, oh shit. I was like, Joseph is holding it down against a grown man here. And it was like, that man wanted nothing to do with him. and then also game seven against the Jazz, right? Coming back, winning that game, and the crowd not leaving after winning this game seven to go to the NBA Finals for the first time since 1979. Obviously the first time in our entire lifetimes. It was like, this was an incredible moment. And the team was just so likable, right? It wasn't like, there are times that teams are good and you don't rally around them in the same way. But it's like, when you think of the Sonics, this is the Sonics.
I feel like, I mean, the green and gold Sonics, like the previous couple of years, are in there too.
But it's, but there's the Kemp, Payton, Carl, Schrempf. Payton, Schrempf, Hawk, Detlef. Oh, I said Schrempf. Schrempf and Detlef.
Sam Perkins.
Big Smooth, George Karl on the sideline. It's like, this was the last year, really, where it was like, and the next year they hung on or whatever. This was it. This was the peak of basketball and maybe the peak of sports for our childhood.
Yeah, I think quite possibly. So I didn't see a single loss during the regular season, but then during the playoffs, I did not see a single win. We sold some of our tickets in the earlier rounds to, you know, try to cover the cost of season tickets. So you went to that
which
game one against
the
Rockets.
$400 a ticket.
So little. The first, and then you went to at least one of the early games against Utah. So the first game I went to was game five against Utah, where they had a chance to close out and go to the finals and instead lost in overtime. Then, in a story I may have recounted on the pod, game three of the 96 finals of the finals against Chicago, the first home game of the finals, our mom loses the tickets. She does not find them until halftime of the game. Or like the second quarter, we get there at halftime. By that point, the Sonics are already down double digits. They end up losing by 22. You go in game four where they win to extend the series. And it's supposed to be my turn to go in game five, but I just let you go because I thought I was bad luck.
Pretty wild that you skipped an NBA Finals game because of karma purposes.
It really is.
You're like the Chiefs fan who left early and then the Chiefs came back and won the Super Bowl.
The ends justified the means. The Sonics won the game.
You know what we forgot? And I think this was 95, was the NCAA tournament being in Seattle.
The Final Four being
the
in Seattle?
The Final Four being in Seattle. Was that 95?
It was because, yeah, those guys were all rookies in 95.
And you remember 96. Jan had tickets to, like, the Fan Day or whatever?
Fan Fest, yes.
Fan Fest, and she lost the tickets in a library book. And I remember her saying that she was praying to St. Peter? Francis? Which is the one that... There's one that's this patron saint of lost stuff. It's one of those two fuckers.
I guess it was St. Jude, but...
Yeah, it's not Francis. That's animals.
She was praying.
Al taught me that.
Whatever Saint Catholics pray to, whatever young pope, new pope, old pope, two popes they pray to.
Well, a lot of people are. There's some idolatry around that young pope. I hate to break it to you. Don't, spoiler alert for the new pope season.
And she found the tickets, the Fan Fest tickets, in a book or whatever, right before.
Boy, I don't remember these being lost. I only remember going and playing bump under the tutelage of Purdue coach Gene Katie.
There we go.
It was. Very stern figure.
I remember Big Country was there.
13 years old.
And then he would have yelled at you. He's a much more stern coach.
I did a 3-point contest at that point. That was a good time.
Okay,
St. Anthony is the patron saint of lost objects.
All right, well, so Jane was praying
out.
To whatever. 1996 was not defined by any of these things, though. Because 1996 was the most important Olympics year of our entire lives.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, Dream Team in 92 is pretty important. We didn't remember it.
No, we were too young. Mrs. Fantasy Genius.
You were too young. I was in.
It was a hot summer in Seattle. And we were sitting around watching, like everybody else in America, Atlanta, Georgia, and the 96 Summer Games.
We were. And the sport I was paying the most attention to is. Probably not the one you two were paying the most attention to.
Was it gymnastics?
It was gymnastics.
Yeah, Carrie Strug.
It's the most important gymnastics.
Carrie Strug, Shannon Miller, Dominic Morciano.
Wow.
These names ring a bell?
Of course.
It was amazing.
Only Carrie Strug rings a bell. No.
It was hot, as you mentioned, super hot. We had nothing to do because, I mean, we were kids in the summer. But then when the Olympics would come on, it was like, there's something to live for. Like something exciting happening in the summer. I'm legit not kidding. It was so exciting. We would like watch it on our tiny ass TV. And we would watch, well, my friends and I would watch the gymnastics. And then
Rob Ducey would come over.
Because, you know, the little waves and subtle hellos worked. No, there were no adult men coming over. It was just, well, we did actually at that time. Sorry, side note, but I have to share. We had this elaborate scheme to seduce the pizza man. it involved...
We had a lot of seduction schemes.
Yes. We had very few seduction schemes in 1996.
The only song we knew on the piano was Chopsticks. But we had a piano in the front room where the front door was where the pizza man would come. And so we practiced our seductive chopsticks, and then we were going to seduce the pizza man. And then actually take all his money was the plan. But anyway.
It's a devious plan. This reminds me of trying to sell popsicles, I think, with our cousin David. And he would do a recording of The Entertainer since he played the piano and then drag a wagon around or something and do
oh,
it.
Oh, wow. So, I would have bought that.
Drove around selling popsicles?
I would have bought that for sure.
What's it walked called? Around.
Probably Ken. Right across from where I was.
No, what's the name in the neighborhood, though? Not Kenilworth Ridge. It's
I don't know.
You're Forest is not Forest Estates, but the other one. Forest Trails.
We walked around Forest Trails.
This is
going to
be very exciting for the Jeremiahs when they hear about this.
Right. We were in Boulevard Park.
We were in Boulevard Park.
Boulevard Lane.
Okay.
Yeah, Boulevard Lane.
Fun in Boulevard Lane.
No, it wasn't Boulevard Park.
You can't take Boulevard Park from us.
We were in Boulevard Lane half the time, and half the time we were in Dirty, Dirty Cascade, which I can say because I'm from there.
Dirty, Dirty Cascade? Wow.
It was kind of yucky, but I loved it. Anyway, so when we weren't trying to seduce the pizza delivery person.
Back when the old Sunset Bowl was gone.
Oh. No, Skyway was there too. Skyway Bowl. Still is, but don't go there. Anyway.
Back before they all turned into Hooters casinos and bowl.
We were like a little bit old to be playing with Barbies, right? Because we were 11. But after the gymnastics would be on for the Olympics, we had to reenact what was going on. And we did not have the skills to physically reenact this, like in the backyard. You know, like we couldn't do like a running race or whatnot. Like there's no way we would be flipping or doing any sorts of handstands or balance beams or whatnot. So pulled out the old Barbies. We'd reenact this with the Barbies in the front room until the next like gymnastics, whatever floor routine or whatnot would come on. It was great. It was good times. Loved it. Also really enjoyed watching the horse racing that summer. Not horse racing. There was like steeplechase in the Olympics, dressage in the Olympics. Losing you. But it was great. There's equestrian events in the Olympics that were just that, you know, made my heart sore at the time.
Well, and then Richard Jewell, like this Olympics had everything, right? Like there was drama around the Olympics. It was hot that summer. We were sitting around, like literally when you're a kid, the only thing you can do over the summer is you've got baseball on. So this is only like live action things. You've got baseball, all the TV is old, and you just like ride bikes with your friends.
And eat the popsicles that have two sticks.
So can we talk? Did we talk about this last week?
I don't know what.
Two-stick popsicles.
Not specifically, necessarily.
Okay, I think maybe we're saving this for Mrs. Fantasy Genius. Because walk me through what flavors are the best flavors of the double-stick popsicles.
Well, everybody wants the double-stick popsicles that are red. So mm-hmm. The cherries, the strawberries, the whatnot.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed the bananas. So
oh,
I, you know,
God.
I kind of had...
Well, of course, Kevin liked bananas.
No, I didn't like the bananas. I like bananas. Not the banana flavored popsicles. I want to be very clear about
that. Chomping down on real bananas like a psychopath.
I had the monopoly on the banana popsicles because nobody else wanted them. But aside from those, people like the red. People like the purple. Mm-hmm. Then the green.
Blue. Blue was awesome.
There was no blue because we did not have a Costco card. So we were getting the Kroger whatevers. Like, there was no blue.
Sad.
Nobody wanted the orange. So we would do this thing.
I did like the orange. It's true.
Split the orange popsicles. And so people would get one half of an orange and one half of a good flavor. But you really can't split them very well. So somebody would get a good half and somebody would get a shitty half. And that, I mean, I just remember that being like, oh God, I got the tiny ass half where the stick's hanging out.
This is what didn't happen at Sonora Town.
Oh.
That's a callback. That's a callback, folks.
Oh my God, you've got the Carcino games.
Yeah, we should have gone into this last week with Candy. 96 was the first ever Carcino Olympics.
God.
With us, the famous cousin Candy, and our other cousin Chris.
Because we were all caught up in Olympic fever.
We really
That's
were. That was,
this was the most important Olympics.
I don't remember watching the Olympics
you
at
don't?
All.
I don't. I distinctly remember watching Carcino in our basement with our dad. With the board was still on the pool table.
With your mom.
Oh, yeah. Jan was there.
So I have two memories of the Olympics, and both of them are not watching the Olympics. The night of the bombing, I'm pretty sure I was watching the Mariners were playing the Angels. Edgar Martinez got hurt playing third base. It was the last time he played third base.
Oh, yeah, that was
weird.
Career. He was playing third base.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Pretty awkward.
And then also the Kerry Strug, the final night of the gymnastics in the Olympics, I was at our cousin David's house. I remember that.
And you were listening to the Moody Blues.
Probably. But we were enough in the Olympic fever that we had the first ever Carcino Olympics, and the famous cousin Katie was the gold medalist, I believe.
Ugh.
We could have talked about this last
Go
week.
Katie.
Guys, so.
Oh, she just had an age advantage.
No,
so did I.
Amazing.
I mean, she was like slightly older than I am. But
boo.
Katie's a powerhouse.
So I was, the participants were me. I was 11.
Correct.
Yes, we were.
Chris was also 11.
Yes.
And you and Katie were 14.
That is correct.
No, That's a huge difference.
And he's a big advantage for
us. Did Mughal participate?
I don't think he did. He was 6 at that point, or 5. He was not even yet 6.
He's wearing his rain boots.
Naked.
He participated in 2004 when we brought them back for the second time.
And did I win that in 2004? I think Chris won.
I don't remember.
Have I never won a Carcino Games?
You definitely didn't win in 2012 when we had a full, when I can pull up the Tumblr for it.
Oh, God. Don't share this. Nobody Google Carcino Games.
Google Carcino Games.
I mean, definitely
like,
so
legit,
many,
do it.
So
try
many
it.
Carcino references.
I swear to God, I've been the most diversely athletic member of the Carcino family.
You know what really hurts you?
You always cheat. It's like half of the games in 1996 were, they were, I'm not the strongest swimmer.
The swimming was a rough one for Tristan.
Tristan swimming.
The famous Cousin Kitty and Chris had a big advantage because they have
this
a pool.
This is fucking bullshit. I was raised in Boulevard Park, not a lot of swimming pools around, learned how to swim in some lady's house who had a pool in her house
that
in
is correct.
Fucking Boulevard Park.
Where we once had your birthday party in 1993. Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
I mean, it wasn't in her house. It was at the pool.
So but the pool was in her house.
It was like connected, but it wasn't like... like her family was just wandering
she
through.
She had an indoor swimming pool in her house in Boulevard Park, Washington.
It's very odd in many
right?
levels.
Right, isn't it? It's across from the SeaTac Community Center, which I guess it was SeaTac.
No, it was not near there.
It wasn't?
No.
I thought it was right by the SeaTac.
It was closer to 128th.
Those are right next to each other. I guess no, maybe they're not. Okay.
Your sense of geography has never been your strong suit.
If you don't want to get wet and there's a pool situation happening and Tristan is swimming, you need to back up something because there is so much splashing and there is so much frantic movement. I mean, he gets across the pool, but it's a spectacle.
It's not elegant.
I love you and you get the job done.
It's not elegant.
But it's not elegant.
Should we talk music? In 1996,
well,
as we near the hour
before we
mark
get to music, because I feel like that's what we're gonna wrap it up with, which I can't be done with 1996 yet.
This is a terrible idea for a segment. We're doing 2-hour
it's
podcasts
the
every week.
Best segment.
Is the listener hanging in there?
I hope so.
Is there a way to tell that? Probably not.
Well, these are not live. We're not. It's not like.
No, I mean, like, who's, like skipping
we've
through?
We've gone Instagram live and people are falling off.
They said we wouldn't go live on a Tuesday night.
To my 501 followers.
And that movie is Independence Day.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I swear to God, burned into my soul is when the spaceship is hovering over the town and first shoots down the, like, ray of explosion or whatever. It's, like, seeing that and then there's just, like, fire coming at you. I think it's on the White House, right?
Yes.
That is the coolest shit I've ever fucking seen. And then Randy Quaid saying, I'm fly, I'm pilot. And you're just like, kill me. This is what cinema is.
Martin Scorsese.
Gotta take your jacket off for this one.
Independence Day is the height of cinema. My main memories of Independence Day, number one, the playing of the song, The End of the World as We Know It, at the beginning of the song, the R.E.M. And then
there's a cat running around there in like a little lab.
And then number two, the visual of the alien like coming up against the glass.
Oh, God, that shit
that
was terrifying.
So many nightmares Ooh. About that. Like anytime I looked outside and then during the night, that entire summer,
right there,
thought that was going to be out there.
Yeah.
Wait, it was 96. Wait, what year was it? What did you injured your knee?
I was in sixth grade.
Okay.
So yeah, that'd be 96.
No.
It would have been 97. Nope. If it was after sixth grade.
It would be 96.
No, it was when. Oh, wow. So that was. I just Googled.
I did my research. We are the same age. It was 96.
You crunched the numbers. I just Googled 1996 in film.
But Tristan's 3 years behind me. I was in sixth grade in 94, like graduated sixth grade in 94. So it was, depends if it was after sixth grade or before sixth grade.
I think the Sonics were in the finals in my sixth grade year, though.
Yep. Because in 96, we were going from sixth grade into seventh grade. That summer. Yes.
And I'm pretty sure we were playing.
But we're 3 years apart. I know how many years apart we are.
I don't know. Anyway, do you want to know?
Oh, I'm not. I'm a different grade.
Worldwide gross. Gained almost double the number two film of the year, Independence fucking Day, because it is the greatest movie ever made.
Wow.
Strong Can we make
words.
Our children watch this?
No, it'd be terrifying for them.
Your kids are very frightened of things. You think Luca can handle
watching a movie about aliens?
No.
Him, if he's overhearing us talking about this right now, he's probably freaking out.
You know he is, too. He's probably sitting on the stairs.
$817 million worldwide gross. Twister, like a piece of shit movie it is.
Twister.
$494 million worldwide gross. Call me when you have a global star like Will Smith in your film. Okay, before we get to our good friends at hiphopgoldenage.com. It's the year return of the Mac.
I mean,
literally the greatest song ever recorded was recorded in 1996, excluding nobody.
Certainly the best karaoke song, that's for sure.
Ooh, amazing.
The greatest song ever recorded.
Full stop.
Mark Morrison. You may read his Wikipedia page about how he paid somebody else to go to his civil duty cleaning up garbage or whatever after he was arrested. None of that matters because Mark Morrison, he didn't have a second hit. You don't want Mark Morrison to have a second hit because he recorded the greatest piece of music that has ever been recorded in Return of the Mac. It is timeless.
Yeah.
No disputes?
No disputes.
All right.
It better be number one on Hip Hop Golden Age's 1996 list. I'm getting very upset at Hip Hop Golden Age.
I will tell you, there's one song that dominated the airwaves more than Return of the Mac did. This was,
Hypnotize.
No. Hypnotize was 95. This song defined our childhoods.
Was it on the Heavy 7 at 7?
It was the Heavy 7 at 7.
Did I get it for my 1 cent 10 CDs from the BMG Music Club? I did for the first time that year.
Weirdly never did.
I don't know how I was legally allowed to do that, but I legit did that.
That's the crossroads.
Oh. We won't be lonely because we've got the crossroads to keep us company.
This was like, it was one of the songs that we might not have loved it.
Yes, we did.
I'm saying we might not have loved it as much as we loved Return of the Mac.
Okay.
Return of the Mac is an important song. Crossroads was the most famous song at an assembly. I'm pretty sure I was in sixth grade. Maybe I was in fifth grade. I
Well, 1996 would have extended to your sixth grade year.
It was at a Nova assembly at Valley View with a bunch of kids, and we dressed up, and we came out and did like a little skit as a group called Eardrums and Harmony.
Okay.
Bone Thugs and Harmony mattered.
No one's disputing that.
Number two, we have Ghostface Killah with All That I Got Is You featuring Mary J. Blige.
Mary.
You're going to love this one. I Ain't Mad At Ya.
Yes.
And I believe Can I Get Your Phone Number?
That's not how
it is. No, Can I Get Your Phone Number?
I have to see what your All Eyes On Me came out. I think that was 96.
I definitely got that in my BMG pack.
Not All Eyes On Me film. No, get out of here.
Oh, you need that disambiguation page.
Oh yeah.
Can we talk a little bit more about Can I Get Your Phone Number?
Feel free.
It's an amazing song. It's an entire song about getting someone's phone number, but there's no other information. And it works.
All Eyes On Me, 1996.
Yes.
One of the greatest rap albums ever recorded. So, at number 13 on disc one, book one, as it's called, All Eyes On Me, we have I Ain't Mad At Ya. And then the 1-2, it goes, California Love, I Ain't Mad At Ya. Bam, what's your phone number?
Yes!
Going in strong. All hyped. That's when you try to get the phone
featuring
number.
Featuring the legend Danny Boy, who's also on I Ain't Mad At Ya. Okay. Imagine that. Number four, If I Ruled the World by Nas, proving that he wasn't a one-hit wonder with Illmatic. And number five, we've got De La Soul with Stakes Is High, a track we did not know.
Nope.
In 1996. Nope. Another song where we eventually knew who they were, but Elevators, Me and You by Outkast. Call me when Rosa Parks is on Cube 93.
So wait, where is Return of the Mac?
Wasn't that the album with the boobs on the cover? Yes.
Of which one?
Outcast.
Outcast? Oh.
Yep.
No, it's on Southern Playlist at Cadillac Funky Music.
Yep.
We also have...
It's the Green Lady.
I'm pretty sure...
I wasn't supposed to look at that one.
Then 1996 is the year of the Fugees.
Yes, it was, because Lauryn Hill poster next to Ken Cloud.
Yeah.
Lauryn Hill was before Ken Cloud on my wall.
So
Ken Cloud was 97.
Nobody was before Ken Cloud. May have ranked some other songs ahead of this, but the Fugees in general and the score definitely dominated 1996.
And that's when I started wearing my boxer shorts that I always had under my tearaways. I just go ahead and pull them up and let them peek out from underneath the tearaways, and then I would start putting my men's jeans over them. Because I was like, if Lauryn Hill can pull this off, scrawny looking white girl me definitely can pull this off. It was a bad look.
I distinctly remember being in the Costco. We were leaving Costco. The thing about Costco that's so cool is
I'm
that
so sad I missed Costco.
It hasn't
didn't have a Costco cord.
It hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed. Like, I could drive out of the Costco.
Well, the Fourth Avenue Costco has changed because they've got the self checkout now.
Wait, what?
Yeah, they've got self checkout.
I never get out of the house, so I don't know this.
But the Costco parking lot always feels like the Costco parking lot. Like, 100%. When was the last time that shit changed? I remember driving out of it with Jan in a Dodge Dynasty or a Camry or something, or a Cadillac, right? What car do you think it was? It was probably a purple Dodge Dynasty.
Could be either of those.
It was a Dodge Dynasty maroon. That would overheat and we'd have to roll the windows down or turn the heat up driving to a Mariners game.
You turn the heat up when it's overheating.
And...
Oh, man, so many jams off... The score?
The first time that we heard Killing Me Softly was they're playing it like early in the run on Cube, because we were listening to Cube every day. So like I knew generally
all day, every day,
starting to be played on there. And I heard it with Jan in the car and I was just like, what is this?
Because it didn't sound like anything else on Cube. Doesn't even necessarily sound like anything else on the album.
At no point did Lauryn Hill ask for your phone number.
No. Did your mom say... She's stealing that song because mine, sure.
No, you think Jan's heard of Roberta Fleck?
My mom was like, she stole that song.
Jan was hearing that track for the first time ever.
I agree.
How is California Love at number 25 on hiphopgoldenages.com?
I have some questions about hiphopgoldenage.com.
Well, they're our good friends.
Are they?
California Love, though, I do remember Heavy 7 at 7. John Roddy was just like talking to us. And he was like, hey, there's a track that like, we all need to hear. We turned on the Heavy 7 at 7. And it was
I would wait
one.
For the Heavy 7 at 7. We would sit around in the hot summer with our two-stick popsicles waiting.
It's wild because they only played 7 songs on regular rotation.
Yeah, so we knew all the Heavy 7 because it was the same 7 as all day long.
They didn't call it the late 7 at 7. It was the Heavy 7 at 7.
You're thinking of the Clem and I cover?
Nope.
We got anything else in 1996?
What about Real McCoy? That was like a big one in my life.
McCoy. Oh, it was on ATLians.
ATLians, yes.
Sorry, not Southern Playlist of Cadillac Funky Music was like earlier.
Right.
94. ATLians. But there's still this is the cover of ATLians.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one. The Green Lady.
No. You know the ATLians, so back the hell up off.
I mean, Another Night came out in 1994, so.
I feel like that was.
Another night, another dream. Of...
Runaway was also 1994, so I don't know about this one.
Maybe that just came in my BMG music pack a little late.
Yeah, I mean, could be.
You know.
They do not appear to have put out any music in 1996. Their success was at their peak in 1995.
94, 95, all right. I was late on that.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for an elevator.
Just an elevator?
I'm trying to think. I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of what it is from.
I feel like we might need to move on since we're well past the hour mark.
Oh,
now.
God. But that's the single artwork for elevators. There's an ATLian.
I mean, we've thoroughly remembered 1996.
Okay, look,
Next week.
Need to talk about sports.
Next week, 1997.
All right, 1997.
But we still have to talk about
Panda Express
Christmas and
the
Coach's Corner.
1997. Oh, fuck. Okay. Panda Express.
Panda's gross. Move on.
Oh, no.
Wow.
So
saving you some time. I'm being efficient.
One of Tristan's favorite things in the our Seattle searches, which, by the way, first off, he couldn't manage to get to Miyako Teriyaki, which is located 5 minutes from his house.
Look, I was going to go there after basketball practice, but we go hard at basketball practice.
They closed at 9. Panda Express was open until 9:30. Hence, you've got this week's Panda Express. But this is something we are planning the whole time. Because sometimes some
just
of the
best... Just wait till we get to Safeway Teriyaki.
Wow. Some of the most fun parts of the search is to go with the national versions or the chain versions of the food we're talking about locally.
Like BB's Teriyaki. Everybody can feel how angry you get at me when I talk about this.
Look... I just got to be clear that I'm going to have to speak my teriyaki truth at some point here.
I was... Fucking speak it. I was prepared to say that Pan Express was not the worst teriyaki that we've had yet.
Pan Express is not the worst teriyaki I've had yet.
Of the search?
Yes.
I also want to say when I said panda sucks, I didn't mean that, like, for reals, because the orange chicken is amazing, but you don't want to get the teriyaki.
Really, I have, like, occasionally gotten the teriyaki.
Who are you?
I would get half teriyaki and half orange chicken. Like,
who are you?
Just you everyone's like the Panda Express teriyaki? It's so bad.
It wasn't that. I mean, it was moist. It tasted like...
It's not even like teriyaki.
Occasionally there'd be a school lunch teriyaki.
Yes.
Growing up, in the cafeteria.
It's different than the Seattle-style chicken teriyaki.
It's rubbery.
I don't think this is rubbery.
Tenderness, but not in a good way.
I mean, this was, first off, so one of the big differences is they cook the chicken thighs whole and then slice them up right in front of you, right? Isn't that what happened?
In the damn thing.
You
like
brought
everything
baby
else
fantasy
is.
Genius in and he watched them slice some shit up?
No,
like, that's not going to happen.
He sliced anything up?
He didn't go in either.
Oh, you sat with him?
I did.
In the car. Thank you. But like, they're just in a big pile in the case like everything else at damn
Panda
Express.
When I have gotten them previously... They've been in there his whole thighs and have been sliced up.
When you walk in there?
I like that jacket, by the way. Can I feel your jacket? Is that weird?
It's not going to be that soft.
I'm going to do it anyway.
It's not.
I like it.
But it tastes more like you're eating a chicken thigh than chicken teriyaki. It feels like its own thing.
It's like a blackened chicken thigh.
The sauce is whatever.
It's like the chicken thighs that your mom would make and be like, it's teriyaki.
I think Jan actually did make some teriyaki.
Oh, sometimes. Yeah, they always did, but it was always thighs.
Mom was definitely making it. It's like frozen chicken teriyaki that she was heating in the microwave.
That was too exotic for us.
We're going to review Lean Cuisine pretty soon.
Ooh.
Anyway, I give the chicken a 7. I give the sauce like a 5.
You gave the chicken a 7?
Yeah, I think the chicken is pretty solid.
It's fine. It's fine. It's not teriyaki, though. It's chicken.
It's not grilled.
And the teriyaki sauce isn't sweet or spicy. It's kind of just nothing.
No, it's vinegary. I kind of like the sauce. Can't lie. I liked it.
When it comes,
I love balsamic, and that's what it tastes like.
We could have had it on fried rice, but also...
I had it on fried rice.
White rice is not even an option. White rice or brown rice.
It's not?
Are they? I think you can only get fried rice or chow mein.
You can get the fried rice with the vegetables and the egg in it.
That's
or chow mein.
Or chow mein. It's just like
there's a brown fried rice version.
It is brown. The fried rice is brown.
No, there's two alternatives.
He had white fried rice.
Where'd you get that?
Fried rice. That's what it is.
At ours?
Very close. Yeah.
Our Panda Express. Is there just it's not chicken teriyaki. That's the thing. It is chicken and there is
This is like what most people in the country are subject to when they get chicken teriyaki.
It's teriyaki chicken.
So
Yes.
Does everybody in the country think that chicken teriyaki is bad?
I think they think it's fine.
When Migos raps chicken teriyaki, are they talking about this?
Probably.
And what in the world? Because
it's very different.
We've gone over this. We're the only place that has chicken teriyaki restaurants everywhere.
Why would you even like chicken teriyaki?
California doesn't?
No.
Oh.
Seattle is basically...
Portland barely
does. Top 10 of chicken teriyaki restaurants in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
That gyoza.
But... it's just like, if I were to go to Panda Express, which I don't try to do. Let me just ask you this question for both of you.
You do too.
It's occasionally.
I do too. Let's just be honest.
There's a certain element of like, I was eating this today and I was like, I don't hate this. It's not bad. It's just fine.
If you need something really quick, it's, yeah.
Is there anything that Panda Express does well?
Orange chicken. Yeah.
You all agree orange chicken.
100% is their staple item.
Orange chicken's, to me, it's broccoli beef.
That's the second thing you get in your meal. And,
I go double orange chicken generally.
Double orange chicken, or if you're feeling like, I want to try to get some vegetables in to feel a little bit better about myself, then yeah.
I never want to feel good about myself. I mean, the Panda Express.
So you do, the orange chicken's actually good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Especially if you get it fresh. Like if it's been city a long time, then it's not very good. But if you get the fresh orange chicken.
It's so good.
So I mean, it feels like the chicken teriyaki, like it's literally at the end of the case.
It was a relatively new addition. Like when I started going to Panda Express, they did not have.
And speaking of new addition, going back to 1996. No. It's just like, it feels like they have teriyaki chicken because they're like, well, I guess we need to have this because we're the catch-all for Asian food.
Yes.
Not any particular type of Asian food, unless bad is a type of Asian food.
Americanized Asian food.
Orange chicken is good. All right, fine. Maybe the orange chicken is good. But it was just like, there was so little flavor to this today. There was no sweet. There was no spice. It was nothing.
It was vinegary.
You really think it was vinegary?
Yeah.
To me, it was just like, it was neutral.
Not the worst teriyaki I've had recently.
Okay, so what is worse?
We're not going to talk about it right now.
Oh. You're going to say the Miyako teriyaki is worse?
Not talk Miyako? About it.
Get the hell out of here. You're banned from Candlewood Ridge.
Our Miyako?
We're not going to talk about it right now.
Oh, my God. Well, then let me talk about your nasty-ass Red Mill or Red House. Not Red Mill. Red House or whatever.
Oh.
Oh, my God. So when I first met Tristan.
Red House does not exist anymore, sadly.
He's like, we need to go to this place. It has the best Mongolian beef. And I was like, this is like vomit in a container.
First of all, how dare you?
I loved you, but ew.
Second of all, that's it.
And Miyako's good.
I'm tearing down my Ken Cloud poster.
I'm sure it's still there.
No, that place was terrible. Like, I don't disagree that that place was bad.
I don't know that it was terrible. I just think that if you didn't have nostalgia for it, you would probably feel a different way about it.
We ate it as children, and we loved it. It was like...
Because that was the first, like, Asian food we ate on a regular basis.
It tasted like $7 Mariners tickets.
But now that place is Soto Chicken. That's the best chicken sandwich in Seattle, according to the Seattle Times.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that?
I think Seattle Times, what do you have to say about that?
Wow.
Mono exists. It's a real thing.
Which teriyaki do you think Seattle Times is going to pick as the best teriyaki?
No, they've already done it. We've tweeted about it. They've already done their teriyaki stuff.
All right. Well,
their best teriyaki place was you. They picked you as the like Times Person of the Year.
Wait, really?
Well, their number three choice was whatever's the closest to you.
Really?
Yeah, which is legitimately accurate.
But to me, okay, so the Panda Express chicken teriyaki, it's legit kind of bad, right? Like on the scale of if most chicken teriyakis are reach a level of like a 7
teriyakis,
this is it's just
Orakua.
It's an
oh no,
there you go. It's an item that doesn't even need to be on the menu if they do orange chicken better or whatever. Like, there's no reason. There's a reason I went in there at 9:28 p.m. and there was a stack of chicken piled high.
But some people are going to go in there and be like, hey, I want teriyaki chicken because that's
then they can
an
walk
Asian
over
food.
To Miyako.
Miyako.
But in Seattle they can. But in
I was about to talk Kansas shit about City. Miyako.
Did you have the tea while
no.
you were waiting?
They have tea.
I had it to go. I had it on my way to the basketball game last Saturday that we're about to talk to.
All right.
Talk about.
All right. Well, I'm rating. This is easily the worst teriyaki I've had.
Because it's time for the Coach's Corner, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza.
Because Pagliacci takes a week off every now and then.
Oh, no, they don't. I thought just gonna, because Pagliacci wants to know the outcome of last Saturday's game.
And so do we.
So you were gone, as we talked about earlier. The famous Cousin Katie was gone, as we talked about last week. That left
but
just
guess
Coach
who held
me.
It down? Coach Kevin.
ESPN's Kevin Pelton, as the kids like to call him.
So we only had 6 players as well because the famous cousin Katie's daughter and one of her friends were gone last week as well on the same trip. So
we keep a tight 8-man rotation.
For a while, it looked like we might. I was unclear whether we were actually going to get to 5, first off. That was the first concern.
I was sweating.
Then we had 5 players a solid 10 minutes before the game. And then it was like, okay, we're just going to run these 5 players out the whole game. I don't have to make any decisions now. Great. But then the 6 players showed up like 5 minutes before the game. And I had to figure things out on the fly. The team that we were playing.
It's not that hard. One player sits each quarter and one player plays the entire game.
I mean, I was trying to manage Baby Fantasy Genius's minutes because the team we were playing this week.
Load management?
Not load management. But I was going.
You're sitting this one, buddy.
I was only going to rest him.
You don't have to be fucking popped to figure out that one player is going to sit out each quarter. You can't make subs during quarters.
All right. The other player team had an extremely tall player who was quite good that we wanted to make sure that Baby Fantasy Genius was matched up with because he is our tallest and strongest player. So that was an important
thing. Except Gina disagreed.
Important consideration. Well, yeah. So the referee last week, you guys are familiar with.
She runs the whole program.
She runs the program.
I see.
Yes.
She holds it down more than... Because normally it's just down. Some punk kids or whatever who are sort of like kind of half-assing it and glaring at Katie and yelling at us. Gina holds the thing down. It sounds like she refereed. She had some Pac-12 reffing going on.
Well, she was doing it. She would like actually stop the game to instruct the kids.
Yeah, she was doing instruction. It was amazing.
So when kids would travel or something, she would stop the game and then tell them what they did wrong. And then the team would still keep the ball. She wouldn't like call it a turnover, but she was going to step in there. Or when they were all crowding too much around a player who was trapped with the ball, which happens quite frequently.
I would say 12 to 15 times.
So I think our team played pretty well.
Yeah, they did great.
The first three quarters were back and forth, I would say. A taut affair. Fourth well quarter, matched. I was going to rest Baby Fantasy Genius. But the tall kid comes back out there. I've got to keep Baby Fantasy Genius on the court.
Who are you
going to
play for four quarters, Jayla?
Jayla asked to come out, so she was not going to.
I'm telling you, these kids got no stamina. I could play four quarters against children.
Well, she had also like fallen and scraped her knee, so I think that was a part of it as well. So you do the wristbands, who's guarding whom, and I make sure that Baby Fantasy Genius is on the tall kid, and that so have the matchups accordingly. And then, like a couple minutes into these 8-minute quarters, all of a sudden, it turns out the two people have swapped wristbands. And all of a sudden... On the other team.
Oh, you got to keep an eye.
Oh, I thought Gina pulled
him. This was negligent coaching. You're not pinched. No, you're asleep at the wheel.
I was not asleep. I saw what was happening.
Oh, I thought Gina pulled him. And made...
Out of the game?
No. Switched the wristbands.
Maybe she did. I thought it was the other coach.
Because she stopped it.
You think you were...
No, I was watching. Gina stopped it and saw that Luke missed... Baby Fantasy Genius who's getting really tired.
Did you just call him Miss Fantasy?
I was going to call him Luca and then I was going to say Mister and then you I was like, whatever. Luca. Was getting super tired.
He was getting very tired and
defeated,
running hilariously.
And he was starting to get like ridiculous where he like gets pissed off and stops defending. And so she stopped the game because she saw that Jayla still had the fire in her and she switched their wristbands.
But what this meant is that the tall kid was guarding Jayla who we had bringing the ball up.
Right.
And because there's not a lot of passing, she was just kind of... You know, having a tough time shooting over him every single time.
And then she stopped bringing the ball up.
So I thought that...
Because she was tired. So she just stopped being the point guard.
And there was
no one to throw it into because she just wasn't there anymore.
I did think this was a good lesson for us about maybe passing the ball and making sure that we share the ball, which is not a strength of our team or probably any second graders, I would say.
So you're saying you lost with my team?
I did.
No, fourth quarter was tired. They were tired. But they did really well up until
then. Let's just say you weren't a Luke Walton-like fill-in here. or maybe you were a Luke Walton on the Kings-like fill-in. But I asked Luke about the game after, and he was like, we won.
I think the kids maybe have a more optimistic view on the score of the game. I maybe have a more objective perspective on it from the sidelines.
Well,
they were winning until the fourth quarter.
It was a good game. And it was a well-balanced scoring attack, I felt.
Then they brought in some kid that didn't have a jersey. It probably wasn't part of the team.
Didn't have a jersey?
Yes!
What's holding it down out there?
Gina asked me if I was okay with that. I said, fine. I mean, we
saw
we were...
She asked you and you said... It was that kid. Did that kid dominate?
No. Was the kid that was shooting threes.
Oh, this is bullshit.
I know you would be much more upset about everything that happened than I was.
You would not have been okay with that.
I would have been like, I will allow for this child to come in if I can play the fourth quarter. Is dunking allowed?
I don't think this kid, the kid without a jersey, who eventually got a jersey, they just gave him someone else's jersey.
They just gave him someone else's, which he should have done in the beginning.
That hard. Was he on the team?
No.
I don't know.
No.
Oh.
The coach like didn't really know his name. No.
All right, that's it. We're finding whomever.
That's the one that Gina thought that Lucas should
guard. Tell me who the best 7-year-old at basketball you know is, who's not on our team. And just bring him to
Jamal Crawford's son, Seven.
Oh my God. What if we could bring Jamal Crawford's son?
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, he's on our team.
He was playing in the flag football league.
He doesn't have a jersey, but oh God. Yeah, I'm not even going to go there.
So
we're going to find Tobias too. You know he can hoop.
That's the one that Carrie was like, you don't want to play that team.
Jamal Crawford's son is very good at basketball. I've seen him play.
I just have a hunch. I think he can hoop.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll see him Saturday.
I don't know which on our team.
No jersey, though.
You can DM Jamal.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know which of our players does a crossover dribble into a step back fadeaway, but he does that.
Does he really?
Oh, yeah. He plays just like his dad. It's uncanny.
As a 7-year-old?
I don't think he's actually 7.
We need to get him on our team.
Crossover dribble into a step back fadeaway? Are you pulling up clips of young Jamal Crawford?
I'm going to see if I can just Google his age.
What's his name?
Jamal
Crawford? Junior? So I heard this was a revenge game also, though, for a couple of players that we had on our team last year.
Yes.
Did you know about this?
No. You did not.
Oh, you didn't know?
I didn't go to any of the games last year.
Well, can you give me the perspective? Because there were two players, Georgia and Tyler, who were on our team last year.
Yes.
And I would say that one of them was one of my favorite players.
Yes.
And the other of them was one of my least favorite players.
Correct.
And Luca's perspective about this seems very different than maybe actuality.
Correct.
I thought Georgia was an excellent player on our team last year.
Yeah, she was good. But she grew. And she got awkward. And she's not good anymore. She'll probably be good again next year, but right now she's like, you know, when puppies have really big feet. Like, she was so tiny last year and she was in control of her body.
She's
and she
that much taller?
And she played like baby Tristan in the videos I've seen.
Nobody is as good as baby Tristan.
He's 9.
She can make shots.
He's 9?
Wow, he's gonna fucking 9.
Kill these kids on Saturday.
Because they're not checking birth certificates. Bring him on.
Yeah. Take that, Gina. What's his name? Is it Jamal?
JJ.
JJ?
Jamal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be like, pass it to JJ. JJ's inbounding it.
Anyway,
we'll see how that Talkin does when JJ is playing against them.
Talkin just sort of stood there. But anyway, yeah. Georgia, not so great anymore. She'll get there, though.
Did you agree with this? Do you even know who we were talking about?
The pigtails girl.
I don't.
The girl with the pink pigtails. She was not. She did not stand out because she wasn't like last year.
What about Tyler, big man?
Didn't cry at all.
Oh, Tyler was on your team last year?
Yeah.
No, not that big man.
Oh, okay.
The big white kid.
Yeah, no, yeah. I
describe him as...
he didn't cry this time.
Hot plate Williams-like.
And he actually was
he had some McCullough in him.
Defending by, like,
he was doing
arms
good?
Up and jumping.
Wow.
Walked a lot, which is similar to last year, but there was no tears.
When he was able to get inside position, he was tough to stop.
Mm.
Just because of his size.
Yeah.
All right, well, JJ's going to dunk on him.
Oh, for sure.
Sorry. I'll be like, he doesn't have a jersey. Don't worry about it, though. It's chill, right? I'll be like,
are you okay with this?
I'll be like, yeah, he plays all four quarters. I'll be like, you know, we're just going to have him against everybody.
We should do this on the week that we're not there and just make Kevin deal with it.
February 29th.
You're going to be gone again?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because, you know, Pagliacci.
They need to know the outcome.
Doesn't mind missing a game. Just take a week off. Oh, well. Well, thank you so much for coaching my team and losing because an unregistered player was playing and you didn't stop it. Oh, and also, you were letting people...
They also don't keep score. Just as a reminder to everyone at home, to let us know, they do not keep score of these games.
The only reason that it matters is for the self-confidence of the children on the team, and they all thought they won.
That's a good outcome as far as I'm concerned.
It comes down to the trophy factor. Do we order trophies? Do we not? Your thoughts.
You're asking me this question on the podcast?
Kevin, your thoughts. Do they need a token? Do they not need a token?
Hadn't
How does
they
this go?
Earn Let's just get a trophy for JJ.
Ooh, that's cheaper too.
Jage, third Colton brother.
Just a big one.
Like everyone talks about this. First off, like, I guess I am a millennial, but I definitely got trophies for just participating as a kid. You did too, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved trophies.
I don't think that's...
I had so many softball trophies, it was great.
That's definitely not kept us from being competitive. You, of all people, can testify that the Fabulous Pelton Brothers are still awfully competitive. It's the
Monopoly pushed me in the face.
Oh, my God.
We don't have enough time to get into that. We're already an hour and a half into this pod.
So yes to trophies.
Yes.
Because everybody did their best. Growth mindset.
It was a gritty performance.
Well, maybe we'll teach Luca. Can I go to bed now? Later.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mrs. Fantasy Genius.
Thank you for having me.
Let's move into the sports section of the pod, starting with our NBA update. Not a good night for the Blazers, who got blown out in New Orleans against the Pelicans. Zion Williamson, a huge performance. And the Pelicans coming on in that playoff race, even though I still think the Blazers are the favorite to finish eighth in the West. Got a good win on Sunday night against Miami. Their second win of the season with me in attendance. So that was a nice one for them to get.
Times they are changing. I don't want to get too into this because we've already been talking for so long. Let's talk about the Blazers later.
Okay.
Not later today, but...
In subsequent weeks?
Yes.
You did ask me earlier if there was a timetable for Yusuf Nurkic's return. And
oh, yeah.
The original thinking was after the All-Star break, but he had a setback with a calf injury. Totally underrated.
He didn't have a setback with those suits he's been wearing.
No setback there.
Man.
Unrelated, obviously, to the leg injury, but still something that prevented him just from improving his conditioning and working on the court the last few weeks. So I think now I'd be a little surprised if we saw him in the month of February.
That's right.
Blazers did not do anything at the trade deadline, by the way. There's your trade deadline update. Isaiah Thomas got traded and then got waived. So that was a rough one.
Is he done?
Quite possibly. But Marquese Chris got signed to a full NBA contract again and had like 25 points against the Lakers. So that was good times.
Insane. Call me when he's cold-blooded.
On the Sounders front, a new collective bargaining agreement between the MLS and its players is complete, brings free agency to more out-of-contract players, better travel conditions, is requested by the players. Targeted allocation money will decrease over the course of this CBA in favor of general allocation money, which is more favorable to American players, it's generally believed. Not a dramatic increase in the salary cap, but players will potentially share in added revenue from new TV deals when the MLS renegotiates those. In a couple years here. The Sounders officially announced the transfer of central defender Yaimar Gomez Andrade from Union de Santa Fe in Argentina using targeted allocation money. And then last week beat USL side Sacramento Republic FC 6-2 in a closed-door scrimmage at CenturyLink Field. Played an approximation of their starting 11, missing Gomez Andrade, who had not yet reported to the team. Nico Ladero, who is back at home getting treatment for tendonitis before rejoining the team as they trained this week in Mexico City. And Gustav Svensson, who was a late scratch due to a minor injury. Most notable from that game, I think, was the performance of João Paulo in his first appearance in a Sounders uniform. Set up the third goal with a great ball to a streaking Kelvin Leerdam and supplied strong play as a two-way central midfielder. Leerdam, in that case, found Jordan Morris for the finish. So it was nice to see the Sounders dominate lesser foe after they hadn't really done that in their previous exhibition play. But... still preparing for the start of the CONCACAF Champions League, which is next week.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that MLS offseason.
No, it's kind of nice. I do feel like the return of soccer is making me feel like, the tulips are starting to bloom a little bit here.
It was actually not rainy the last couple of days.
The sun's been going down later. I'm starting to feel...
The sun is going down noticeably.
I'm starting to feel a hint of spring on February 11th.
No, if only it would get over 50 degrees. The Seattle Storm free agency opened on Monday, and the Storm completed a sign-and-trade deal with the Connecticut Sun for restricted free agent Morgan Tuck, swapping down from the 7th overall pick of the draft to the 11th pick in the first round in the process. Tuck played with Brianna Stewart at UConn for all four championship teams before being taken 3rd overall by the Sun, 2 picks after Stewart. She underwent microfracture knee surgery on her right knee during her sophomore season at UConn, and then surgery on her left knee during her rookie season, has played all but one game over the last two seasons, even though there's some long-term concern about the condition of her knees. Storm was definitely hoping to get the 2008 version of Tuck, who made 35% of her threes and 55% of her twos. She kept her three-point percentage around the same spot last season, but dropped to just 41% inside the arc, is a reserve for the Connecticut team that reached the WNBA Finals before falling to the Washington Mystics. Would expect the Storm to bring back a really similar roster. Tuck probably fills some of the role that was played by Courtney Paris last year. It'd also be interesting to see how her arrival affects Crystal Langhorne in the Storm front court, but you know, not someone who's going to come in as a starter, coming in as depth. UW softball kicked off the 2020 season by going 5-0 last weekend in the Buzz Classic, winning a pair of one-run games, 8-7 over UAB on Sis Bates' walk-off hit, and then a 2-1 win over Georgia Tech in a game where Gabby Plain pitched a one-hitter. Plain went 3-0 last weekend, allowing 7 runs, 4 earned in 15 2/3 innings, while highly touted number one overall recruit freshman Kelly Lynch started 2 other games for the Huskies and gave up 6 runs in 8 innings. Yeah, kind of a rough debut for her. Yeah, but you know, she's just getting acclimated to the college scene. The difficulty turns up quite a bit for the Huskies this week. They'll play UCF at UCF on Wednesday before beginning the St. Pete Clearwater Elite Invitational on Thursday, where they will face number 2 Alabama, number 9 Florida State, number 18 Texas Tech, number 19 South Carolina, unranked Liberty, poor Liberty. And then an exhibition on Sunday versus the USA softball team that's preparing for this summer's Olympics. So that'll be an excellent early set of early tests for the Husky softball team, which is still ranked number 1
in
the country.
Bring everybody on.
Yeah. UW women's basketball suffered a 74-65 loss.
Are any of those games on TV?
I think those are probably streamed on something that you have to buy one off for this.
Great.
Would be my guess.
Cool.
Probably not a lot of TV in the softball non-conference. That, actually, some of those could be on ESPN now that I think about it, because ESPN is a partner on this. I know they talk about it during the Women's College World Series. Yeah, actually, no, I pay no attention to me at all. The Thursday's game will be on ESPN2 at 1 p.m. on Friday.
Are you familiar with ESPN?
I've heard some things about them. 10 a.m. on Friday, Florida State, that's ESPNU. Liberty game will be on Watch ESPN, ESPNU on Saturday at 5 p.m. for the South Carolina game, and at 7 a.m. Pacific time, ESPNU for the Texas Tech game. So that one's going to be
on Sunday.
Yeah, that one's going to be.
But you can watch all this on the ESPN family of networks.
Also, it appears that Alabama lost last weekend and has dropped to ninth overall.
Yeah,
according to the UW schedule.
I wish they were number 2.
Florida State up to number 5. South Carolina and Texas Tech still 18 and 17, respectively.
All right.
And then you can also stream on Watch ESPN that exhibition versus the USA softball team on Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time.
So they play Texas Tech on Sunday and then go right into an exhibition with UW softball or USA softball.
Yep.
Nice.
Softball, man.
I'm excited for this.
Yeah. UW women's basketball suffered a 74-65 loss last Friday at home versus Utah, but then snapped a 9-game losing streak by beating Colorado 61-52 on Sunday. This weekend, they are headed to face the Arizona schools Friday at number 12, Arizona, which is up to 4th in the Pac-12 at 8-4, having won in overtime at Oregon State on Sunday to move ahead of the Beavers. Number 22, Arizona State, up on Sunday. In Tempe, Arizona State was swept by the Oregon schools, including a loss at Oregon State on Friday night. And again, the Sun Devils led with 3.1 seconds left. Oregon State tied the score with 0.4 seconds left. ASU then turned it over on the inbound pass. Oregon State got the ball back and got a Michaela Pivick game winner at the buzzer in a wild finish in Pac-12 play. Arizona State has now lost 3 in a row and 4 of the last 5 in the exceedingly difficult Pac-12 conference. UW men's basketball suffered a 79-67 loss on Sunday at Washington State, dropping to 2-9 in conference play with their 6th consecutive loss. Did you watch this one at all?
No.
You were in LA, right?
I didn't even know that. I got a notification about it. I was like, oh, damn.
I listened to the first half of this as I was driving to Portland for the Blazers game and then watched the last 5 minutes or so, streamed it in the press room. Defense was pretty disappointing, I would say, in this one. The Cougs got 13 offensive rebounds and shot 28 free throws. And predictably, the offense again struggled late, despite Jaden McDaniel's best performance since at least the Utah game. That was encouraging to see from him. Husky men headed this weekend to LA to face those schools on Thursday at USC, which is amazingly still ranked behind the Huskies in KenPom despite a 6-5 Pac-12 record, partially because the Huskies won by 32 against the Trojans in Quad A Green's last game this season. USC started 6-2 in Pac-12 play before dropping their last three. This is a team that turns the ball over way too much and just doesn't have enough outside shooting around its star freshman in the post. In case that recipe sounds familiar to you, that, of course, being Onyeka Okongwu in USC's case. He got pretty thoroughly dominated by Isaiah Stewart when these two teams played in Seattle, so it'll be interesting to see that matchup again this weekend, or this week. On Saturday, the Huskies will travel to, will be in Westwood to face UCLA, which has used an upset win at UW in the Pac-12 opener as a springboard for a 6-5 conference record after a dreadful non-conference start. Still getting blown out on a regular basis, but has impressive wins recently over Colorado, and in their most recent game at Arizona, pulled off an upset of the Wildcats. Forward Chris Smith has really been dominant in conference play and has keyed this stretch. Our old friend Jake Kyman, who scored 21 points in that win in Seattle.
It doesn't really matter, though. It's like we cared at the time. This season was going to collapse whether they won or not.
Yes. Has scored 21 points in his next five games combined. He then exploded again for 20 in a loss to Oregon, and now has scored 20 points in UCLA's last four games, including a DNP versus Arizona.
Not paying attention to UW basketball has been the best decision I've made this spring. Like, getting that notification and
it's really
not
apparently
having...
going to better than going to Panda Express.
Getting the notification about the score of the game against Wazoo and seeing that they lost that game. Just like, I have no emotional investment in this whatsoever, and that is the right decision.
Yep. UW football did not sign anyone on signing day. Not a real surprise. Obviously, most of the action has now moved to the early signing period in December. There were a couple of players the Huskies were in on that they were not able to pick up, but still one of the best classes in the Pac-12 and one of the best in UW program history. On the Seahawks front, tight end Greg Olsen scheduled to visit the Seahawks this week. It was reported last week. Olsen was waived by the Panthers after his long tenure there, therefore available ahead of free agency and without costing a comp pick. What do you feel about the possibility of Greg Olsen being a Seahawk?
About the likelihood of it, or how do I feel about it in general?
I guess either.
It seems great.
Yeah.
Why would I be against this?
I mean, it depends on the money, but...
He's still a capable tight end.
Surely looking for a short-term deal at this stage of his career.
The money's not going to be crazy for Greg Olsen right now.
You wouldn't think so.
When does official free agency start? Is it soon?
I feel like we're still a few weeks away from the start of free agency.
And maybe it's because Tom Brady is so present in this, where it's like, I'm getting notifications constantly about NFL free agency. I'm like, is that really starting right now? But obviously I'm pro this Greg Olsen idea.
The league year begins along with free agency. March 16th is the legal tampering period. Okay. So we still got a month there.
Plenty of time.
Yeah.
But so Greg Olsen could sign before then, though.
Yes, he could sign.
Because he was waived.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Jacob Hollister was basically the team's only tight end at the end of last season.
You're not concerned at all about him blocking the thrill?
No.
Okay.
Like blocking the thrill from playing?
Yeah.
Greg Olsen?
Yeah.
Is Pete Carroll all of a sudden not going to be competing? Oh.
I thought you were going to say, is he all of a sudden not going to be running the football?
Or that too. But like, I'm just saying, like, this is not a concern whatsoever. If Thrill Disley is a better player on the field than Greg Olsen is next year, he will play.
Nor did third Pelton brother, Bill Barnwell, who I think confirmed that he was not a big fan of Feature of Sushi and Teriyaki, which got rave reviews. Multiple people on Instagram said that it was their favorite teriyaki in the city.
Really?
Yeah.
There we go.
Replying to our post. Today unveiled his off-season plans for teams in the NFC West, and I wanted to quickly run through the Seahawks list.
Did you see his sort of like scenarios thing that he did where it was like, if player signs with X team, then
yes.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
It was interesting. Jadeveon Clowney was the Seahawks player who was involved in that, so he had some plans for how the Seahawks might replace Jadeveon. But
which hopefully we'll never have to...
Yeah. It was also notable that his contracts for Clowney mostly seemed to average $25 million a year. They were like $125 million. Uh-huh. We talked about we'd feel plenty comfortable going $20 million a year for Clowney. $25 million is a harder decision, but it depends on the guarantees, but I would probably still do it.
How many years?
I mean, it was like $125 million, but again, you don't know what the guarantees would be necessarily.
What does that $5 million really matter? The difference between?
It's a sizable amount, the difference. That's like, you know how many running backs you can sign for $5 million?
You know how many first-round picks you can spend on running backs for $5
million? Well, I don't know if the money is the issue there. Okay, so here's Barnwell's offseason plan for the Seahawks. Number one, work to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney and Jaron Reed. Suggests that Jaron Reed would likely is looking for in the $10 million range, something north of $10 million, and his guess is Reed gets it from another team. So I'm still a little skeptical what the market is going to be for Jaron Reed. Number two, pursue defensive line depth. Even if the Seahawks bring back Clowney and Reed, that they need to rebuild their defensive line with Zee Ansah, Quentin Jefferson, and Al Woods, all free agents, which makes sense.
And none of those players being that productive either.
No. And you've got some youth there with Rasheem Green and Puna Ford. Probably want to add some more veteran depth, especially in terms of run-stuffing defensive tackle. Number three.
You're going to want to use a couple of first-round picks on this.
Let Jermaine Ifedi go. By the way, he didn't even mention who saw meaningful snaps in 2019. That ruled out LJ Collier. Number three, let Jermaine Ifedi go. Okay.
I'm going to wait until the end to comment on
this. Okay. Number four, work out an extension with Shaquille Griffin. Number five, pursue the big name tight ends in addition to, in which Barnwell outs himself, is a card-carrying member of Team Let Russ Cook.
Wow.
In addition to Olsen, Barnwell mentions Hunter Henry, Austin Hooper, who will be probably at the top of the tight end market, Hooper, and then Eric Ebron. Quote, even Eric Ebron would be a massive upgrade.
Wow. In general, I know we've discussed this before, Bill Barnwell is a so-called NFL analyst. And I have to say, with this off-season plan, I agree with all of it.
I mean, he doesn't mention some of the positions we talked about, but I think that's because of the fact that the assumption is, you know, the Seahawks would probably address potentially a replacement for Ifedi and, some additional, he mentions the defensive line, of course, a cornerback, possibly some depth of wide receiver. Those are all positions that you would address in the draft.
I mean, to me, the number one thing, and this is number one on Barnwell's list, is re-signing Clowney. Like, it really is like, the defensive line depth is going to matter a hell of a lot more if they don't re-sign Clowney, but that is priority number one. I'm a little skeptical about exactly what Jaron Reed's going to make, and if it is in the $11 million a year range, I don't know if I'd be upset about them moving on from Jaron Reed.
Right.
But then you need an answer for, and that's where you get to number two, and you need an answer for what are they going to do without Jaron Reed? Which he never really got to the point last season after the suspension of being that impactful of a defensive lineman.
Well, you're probably going to sign a veteran replacement is the answer in all likelihood.
And I think that they're going to have to go out. I mean, there are, it looks like, in this free agent class, and they're going to be paid a lot of money, probably. There are options on the defensive line. You know who I would really like to let cook, though?
Who's that?
Michael Bennett.
Yes.
God, can everybody just move on from any problems that they've had with Michael Bennett? He is the most Seahawks defensive lineman that there is.
I mean, the one downside to letting Reed go and signing someone else is that then, well, I guess you would cancel each other out from a comp pick standpoint. So,
I'd be curious to see exactly who the replacement for Jermaine Ifedi is. I think our assumption is that he's going to be paid more than the Seahawks want to pay him this offseason. And then Shaquille Griffin's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, the only argument would be that, like, you're paying him coming off of a strong season, but I think it could be even better in next year, and certainly if he hits free agency. Our friend of the pod, Mike Sean Duggar, on The Athletic Seattle, had his 10 steps plan for a successful Seahawks offseason, which is pretty similar, but with one notable difference, that point four of his plan is keep Jermaine Ifedi.
Okay.
Although he acknowledges you're angry right now. I understand. Take a minute, relax, and let me explain.
I don't know if I have a strong perspective about keeping a Fetty or letting a Fetty go. It's just about the value.
And right.
That's it. Where it's like, without knowing the exact numbers, you really can't determine whether you want to keep or let a Fetty go. Because there's a certain number that he makes sense at, and there's a certain number that he doesn't make sense at. And I think he's more likely to get paid more than the excess value from the contract.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
The tight ends to me are, this is the question, like, I think Greg Olsen answers this question. And I think that a lot of the other ones would also. I feel like Hunter Henry is going to be a pretty expensive tight end.
Yeah, I think Henry and Hooper are too expensive for what I would want the Seahawks to pay a tight end, because they did get really good production out of Will Disley when he was healthy the last two seasons.
And that's the
concern. You can't necessarily count on that. But
is that whether Will Disley is going to be healthy after two season-ending injuries relatively early in the season. I don't know if anybody, especially when he is healthy, questions Will Disley's ability. But just can't count on the thrill.
That's fair. I mean, and that's why I think it would make sense, because if you go with a veteran that, you know, it still could be Disley's position long term, but you're not necessarily counting on him to be on the field, especially at the start of next season.
That to me is why Greg Olsen makes so much sense, though.
Yep.
Like, outside of any of these players, Greg Olsen is legendary tight end, one of the best pass catching tight ends of all time, and adding him with Will Disley. And then probably adding, you know, rookie depth to the tight end group. Hollister's still there, right? Or is he under contract?
He might be a restricted free agent. I'm not sure. His
probably a fairly cheap restricted free agent.
I think so as well.
Jacob Hollister. Who wouldn't be surprised to have back. That's pretty good core of tight ends.
Yeah. Jacob, looking up Jacob Hollister here.
Do you think that we're going to get a notification within the next 3 weeks, month, that the Seahawks have traded for Stephon Diggs?
No, I think that's very unlikely.
You think it's very unlikely because you don't think the Seahawks will trade for Stephon Diggs, or you don't think Stephon Diggs will be traded?
I don't think Stephon Diggs will be traded.
Okay.
Jacob Hollister is, in fact, a restricted free agent. So.
Okay. He'll probably be a fairly cheap restricted free agent.
I would think so. I don't see teams really prioritizing him.
It's great.
Should we wrap up by talking about the new franchise in town? In their first ever game on Saturday, in their first ever game for the XFL in general, the Seattle Dragons suffered a 31-19 loss at the DC Defenders. Brandon Silvers found Austin Prohl for the first touchdown in XFL history. That's the son of Ricky Prohl, of course. The Dragons led 13-12 at halftime before being outscored 19-6 in the second half. Prohl stepped forward at receiver with 5 catches for 88 yards and 2 touchdowns, including an impressive 57-yard touchdown for the only Seattle score of the second half. Silver's day ended up being pretty poor, 21 of 40 for 217 yards and a pair of interceptions, although he did throw 3 touchdowns. Silver's left the game after a sack on the final drive, with B.J. Daniels throwing 1 pass and coming up incomplete on 4th and 14. And I gotta say, I don't know. Obviously, Jim Zorn has seen a lot more of these players in practice, but it is time to let B.J. Daniels cook. You know what?
Because we've heard of him. Do you know anything about Brandon Silvers?
So apparently he played in the AAF.
Okay.
I was going to try and go give the entire title there, but I realized I don't remember what all of those were. Association of American Football? That's my guess. Where he ended up the starting quarterback for his team by the end of the season.
He ended up the starter by the end of the season.
Yes.
Okay.
And by the end of the season, I mean when they canceled the entire league.
Alliance of American Football.
Alliance, yeah, not an association. Yeah, it's been longer than I remembered since B.J. Daniels was on the Seahawks. It's been a long time. It's like 5 years.
I don't have the same kind of fond memories of B.J. Daniels that everybody else has.
Oh, what about him playing wide receiver?
You're thinking of Seneca Wallace.
Was it B.J. Daniels that caught that touchdown pass against Chicago in the 2006 NFC Championship game?
B.J. Daniels has been on a lot of teams.
Yes.
He has been a Rough Rider. And Salt Lake Stallion. Austin Prohl, on the other hand, though. Like, how did Kason Williams look in this game? Did you watch?
Kason Williams did not have a catch. I don't know if he really played at all. Keenan Reynolds had like one catch, but the big names, the former Seahawks at the receiving corps, did not end up being a big factor in this one.
Who are the star quarterbacks in the XFL after one week?
First off, it's after one week. But Cardale Jones did tear up the I wanted to call it the Seahawks, the Dragons defense pretty considerably in this game. Also, finding XFL stats is shockingly difficult.
Oh, yeah. It was like the scores were on the ESPN app, but there was no box score.
Yeah, and the XFL.com has full box scores, but not any sort of accumulated stats. But there was someone that did XFL EPA through one game, and that someone, Anthony Reinhardt, is retweeted by Third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin, showed that the quarterbacks... Oh, unfortunately, I don't know who these players are. Is that McGoin? No, I don't think it is. Cardale Jones was number two in EPA per play among quarterbacks last week. Brandon Silvers with the Dragons was number seven.
Ouch. Was this fun to watch?
We're going
to
continue research on who the number one player is. Yeah, it was pretty fun to watch. I mean,
what are the differences between the XFL and the NFL?
The game moves much faster. There's a shorter clock. And then the whole thing is designed for the television broadcast, so you can like hear the play calls. There are in-game sideline interviews with players and coaches about whatever happened most recently in the game. I know not everyone was thrilled by that, but I thought it was kind of cool because it's the question that you would want to ask post-game about of a player. But here you get it in real time, and that's kind of fun.
It's basically like preseason football.
A little bit. I mean, preseason football, you're doing interviews on the sidelines, but those are like big picture interviews. Here it's like, hey, Carlo Jones, you fumbled that read option. What happened there? What did you see? What was the read? And then you just heard Pep Hamilton like telling him what to do with the read. Also, Pep Hamilton is the coach of the DC.
Hamilton.
The other thing is I tweeted about the fact that these coaches were mic'd up. You saw they were so excited to yell, punt it, when it was fourth and two. I saw most of the first half of this one, but then had to leave shortly into the second half to go get teriyaki.
Would recommend.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just different enough from the NFL that I think it's interesting from that standpoint. Obviously, the caliber of play is not as high. Also, it seems like teams are passing a lot more and not running very much, which is always exciting news. The Dragons had 21 rushing attempts and 41 pass attempts in this
one. All right. And even Pep Hamilton is running or passing the ball?
Even Pep Hamilton is passing the ball. Their split was not quite as dramatic, though. They had more rushing attempts than passes, 28 to 26. But they were also leading late in the game. It appears that quarterback, who is number one in EPA, is from the St. Louis Battlehawks. So now, just to figure out who the quarterback is,
we've narrowed it down.
We have. We're making progress here.
How many teams are there in the league? Eight?
There are eight teams. Mm-hmm. It'll be a 10-game regular season. You play twice each the other three teams in your conference and four teams, or division, I believe, technically, and four games against the teams in the opposite division.
And then the Mariners get...
I have looked up the box score. I still do not know who this quarterback is, but his last name is Ta'amu.
Ta'amu?
Yeah. Jordan Ta'amu, who was from Ole Miss, apparently. There you go.
Great.
The best quarterback in XFL history, 2.0 history.
Through 1 week. Great.
So the Dragons will be back home for their Seattle debut this Saturday, taking on the hated rival Tampa Bay Vipers at 2 p.m. on Fox. And we look forward to continuing to follow them.
Great. Well, most importantly, C. Mike did nothing wrong in the XFL.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks. So we get a second bonus Coach's Corner this week. Because as I was waiting outside the Panda Express, of course,
yes,
with Baby Fantasy Genius, who joins us now, I asked him, so we did a drill during the practice tonight where the players were not allowed to dribble, so they could only pass so that they learned the importance of passing. And I asked Baby Fantasy Genius if you learned anything in the drill, and what did you tell me?
All I learned was that anger overcomes everything during one that happens. I learned absolutely nothing.
Anger overcomes everything?
It was a very bad choice for Dad to make. Oh. It was really mad. I was really mad. I kind of felt like I wanted to quit.
You want to quit all of basketball?
A little bit.
Because I wasn't letting you dribble?
It was really annoying.
You all dribble way too much. And then when I told you you could dribble, it's like when we said you couldn't dribble, everybody just stopped defending. And then also when we said that you could dribble after that, you just start dribbling around like crazy. I just taught you the greatest lesson you'll ever learn about basketball.
I mean, anger overcomes everything. That's a life lesson.
Anger overcomes everything?
I needed that one unpacked.
What does that even mean?
I don't really know.
Nobody knows what it means.
You felt... It's provocative. You felt very angry because of the fact that your team was having trouble scoring.
Yeah.
But then you stuck with it, and eventually you guys did play well, correct?
I somehow stuck with it.
So is there a lesson here about grit, perhaps?
No, not really.
No. I mean, hopefully it'll come subtly. There'll maybe just be some osmosis. You'll learn some lessons.
All right, that's it. Go read Grit by Angela Duckworth.
What? Yeah.
You're not reading The Hunger Games right now. That's it. What? Go read Grit.
Goodbye.
I mean, you'll enjoy
the
chapter.
How many AR points do you think Grit by Angela Duckworth is?
At least a million.
You'll enjoy the section about Pete Carroll and the Seahawks.
Hello.
Pete Carroll?
Actually, Pete Carroll blurbed the book. I don't know if he's actually, or did he? Brad Stevens blurbed it.
Yeah, some coach did something in it. That's all.
You don't even know what it is. Good summary of this thing that you just learned of.
You know who did an interview with Angela Duckworth and wrote about that book?
You?
Yeah, that was a pretty obvious answer. It was me.
Name dropping.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Baby Fantasy Genius. Time for bed.
Goodbye.